Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and on the show today, I have two guests. The first half we devote to applique, and the second half we'll devote to die cutting. I thought it'd be really great to give a little bit more time and a little bit more depth and find things out. So I have got Sandra Leichner on here, and you have seen her quilts. They're just totally, totally amazing. I'm in awe of her workmanship. It is exquisite. It's detailed. It looks like a painting. I mean, they're just amazing. So I want to find out how she does this. I mean, she does these little bitty berries and beautiful, beautiful vases of flowers and all kinds of critters. I mean, it's so exciting. So Sandra is here to share all her secrets. We're going to be experts. Welcome to the show, Sandra.
Hi, Pat. Thank you.
So this is really, really fun. You know, I'm really excited that, you know, your work is out there in a book. It's out there in patterns. How did you start getting into quilting?
It actually was when my children were small. I had them kind of close together. And I was painting at the time, and, well, you know, little kids don't like mom to sit too long before they need her attention. So I found that painting just really wasn't working out so great for that. So I had always done needlework, and because I had young kids, suddenly I went back to that interest, and I thought, you know what? I bet I can combine my art background with applique. And then I could be creative, sit with my kids. No one knew I was doing my own thing, and they were taken care of. So that's kind of how it came about.
Well, you know, your work looks like paint. You know, the way that you put your fabrics together, that's one of the things I look at and think, oh, my gosh, these look like paintings. So you have a background in art.
Yes, I do.
Yes, so,
I studied graphic design, and I was a painter. I had my first gallery show at age 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it goes way back.
Oh, wow. What? And did you paint in oils, or just curious?
I did watercolor.
Okay. Ah. Well, I can't paint, Sandra. That's, you know, I have to let the fabric do all the work for me. That's
but that's what's so fun about applique is the fabric can work for you. You don't have to worry about mixing the right color. Somebody's already done it for you.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, the first quilts that you did. Because did you start just making these extraordinary pieces, or did you start with like regular 9 patches like most of us did?
They were really sad. Yeah, I started piecing, and in fact, I didn't even want to quilt them, so they were tied.
Oh.
And I think the one I've showed the most of is for my middle son, Jason. I did a sawtooth border, and it didn't match up, you know, at the corners where it's supposed to come together. So instead of figuring out how to make it match, I just kind of cut them off.
Well, you sound like me.
Hey, we all got to start somewhere. You know, I'd like to say, oh, they were always that way, but no.
Right.
No.
Are your kids artists too? Did they pick up the art gene?
My daughter, Jenna, who's my youngest, she did. In fact, she's more into film editing. She has a really good eye for composition. And then my son, Jason, is better than I am. He's phenomenal.
Oh, neat. How exciting. So let's just move forward then. So you got the 9 patches that you got chopped off and tied. And did that like inspire you? Did you keep making quilts after the first few?
Well, actually I almost give it up because I felt patchwork was too constraining. I needed to draw pictures. I needed to go my own route. And I think that's also why I give applique a look, was because whatever I could see, I could make. And I was able to expand my horizons, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons, Sandra, that I like applique. It's like I want to draw a flower, you know, and I can do that with applique a lot easier than piecing a flower.
Right. And I think, you know, a lot of people say this, but I think it's true, too, although I try to say you can do it, mm-hmm. is that some people are really drawn to piecing because they like those constraints, and some mm-hmm. people are drawn to applique because they just need to blow out of the gate.
Right. That's it. You know, when I first started, everything was pretty much traditional patchwork, but I was looking for things that were different. And eventually I wanted to draw shapes. I mean, when I wanted to have shapes. So I had to learn some method of applique. But, you know, you told me that you did needlework as a child. So what type of, did you embroider or were you sewing clothing?
I first learned to embroider. My great grandmothers they did the most beautiful work. And I was surrounded by it. And I always thought it was beautiful even at a young age. But when they passed on, they left me their sewing basket. Mm. And it was full of, you know, the old Reader's Digest from the turn of the century, and they'd have the embroidery yarn stuck in there. And so I just sat down one day and continually kept stitching and taught myself how to embroider. And then I have a mother who is an excellent, excellent sewer. And she taught me how to sew. So, you know, I had it pretty good. I had a mother who taught me how to sew well, and mm-hmm. I had grandmothers who taught me how to do embroidery well.
And you've combined both of those in the quilts that you're doing now. They're,
right.
they're the fine hand work, the fine hand applique, plus magnificent embroidery work. Tons of embroidery work.
Yeah. I call it my fine paintbrush work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's like the applique itself is like your general background work. Mm-hmm. And then the way I use embroidery is to emphasize details.
Ah, well, yeah, I can see that, because you will take the vein of a leaf and you will embroider the veins rather
right.
than quilt them in or fussy cut fabric to showcase it that way, which are other ways people
but, yeah,
would show
that's
the
other
vein.
Ways to do it.
So let's talk a little bit. We're going to talk about your book in the next segment. But first, I want to talk a little bit about your design process. When you started making these quilts that are a little bit more than, you know, that have a little bit more detail to them, what are you doing, a painting first and then, you know, looking for fabric? You know, what's your process?
I carry around a little notebook with me and pictures pop into my head, which sounds really strange, but it's like a slideshow constantly going in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, I can look at something that's just really not that exciting, and suddenly this idea is right there. And so I scribble it really fast. It's not pretty. It's just mm-hmm. scribbled down because I don't want the idea to go.
Right.
And then later I'll revisit those scribbles and then expand upon them on the computer. Now I don't have to hand draw anymore because they have illustration programs.
Yeah, yeah. Which program do you like?
I love Adobe Illustrator.
Okay. Yeah, so do you use like a Wacom tablet with a pen?
I use the mouse.
Oh my goodness. You're kidding.
Actually, I have a Wacom tablet, but I have never had the time to get used to using it. So I have stuck with my mouse. So yeah, everything's drawn with the mouse.
Sandra, this is what you do. Just unplug the mouse and put it in the drawer in the other room. And plug in your tablet, and you will never look back.
I know. You know, and I keep seeing it gathering dust, you know.
Oh.
And it's like, I need to take that poor thing out and exercise it. But
yes.
It's just, I've got to get this done in a matter of, you know, so much time.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
You know.
Yes. Yeah, so you have the idea, and you just already know the tools that you've finessed and got good at.
Right.
So now your work, you do... we're going to talk about your applique style here in just a bit, but let's talk about your fabric, because you have so much shading. How in the world do you purchase fabric, or do you hand dye it, or, you know, what are you using?
I'm using all commercial fabrics, primarily batiks.
Okay.
And usually batiks that are multicolored. and then have a high value change in them in small areas. Because I work with fairly small pieces, so my value changes within the fabric have to be relative to that. So it's mainly batiks. I busty cut a lot. And then I have a technique that I use little hints of colored pencil if I can't get exactly what I need in that area. So I finally figured out how to fix colored pencil so that I can wash my quilts and it doesn't come off.
Oh, well, that's good. How do you do that?
You know the fabric paints by Jacquard? There's one that's an extender, and it looks white in the bottle, but it actually dries clear, and there's no change to the hand of the fabric, none whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
And so you just paint it a little bit over the colored pencil area, let it dry, hit it with an iron to heat set, and you're good to go.
Oh, my gosh. You are just, like, so full of good, good tips. So do you actually have a lot of fabric, or because your appliques are tiny shapes, do you have just a modest collection?
You know, I think the biggest secret is, and I'll bet you can relate to this, appliqueers probably spend more money on fabric than piecers do. I have a whole room dedicated to fabric.
Yeah, we don't want to tell anybody this secret.
No, we don't want anybody to know.
We had to have all the shades of purple, not just two.
That's true, because we can't mix our paints, so we've got to have all the values, all the hues. I'm constantly buying fabric. I have no idea what I'm going to use it for, but right, I know when I'm in the process, in the zone, I don't want to stop and go shop for it, because I probably won't find it.
Right, right. That's the way I work too, is that I need it here so that when I start, I just go to the shelf and I use what I have. So, oh my gosh. Yeah. I tell people that that my fabric is my paint.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Okay.
I agree totally.
We're going to take a little break, Sandra.
Okay.
And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about your book and in there, you know, the type of applique that you do and a bit more about color. So we're going to be right back after the break.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm here with Sandra Leichner, who is an award-winning quilter and an author and just amazing all-around gal. So, Sandra, your book is called Hand Applique with Embroidery with AQS Publishing. Did you always want to write a book?
No. Actually, I think they pulled me kicking and screaming. I have a lot of requests for a book, but I tend to be really wordy, and it was like I had so many ideas, and how do I cram these into a book, and how do I do something different? Mm-hmm. And so I just went back to when people would ask me questions at shows in front of my quilt, mm-hmm. and it was I'd say, well, if you know how to do it, it's really not that hard. And I would always get these looks like, yeah, right.
Right.
Okay, moving on. And so I wanted to write a book that would show them that, yes, you can. It was breaking everything down so that you understood how it worked rather than just doing what I tell you to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, what type of hand applique do you do?
I call it direct applique. I don't use glue. I don't use starch. I don't use any prep work before. Mm-hmm. And part of that I developed because I don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. I have a really busy life outside of quilting, and so I just wanted to streamline it. And it's kind of like what I tell my students is, if it looks good, who cares how you got there?
Right. That's very good. Yeah, you can do it any way you like, as long as
right.
you like it.
And I believe in learning all the techniques. You know, it's mm-hmm. so funny. I just finished teaching, and I always laugh, and you guys are so serious when they first get there, and it's like,
yeah.
relax.
Relax.
I am not going to tell you you can't do something that you've already learned. I'm mm-hmm. just adding tricks to your toolbox.
Right. Now, this is, it reminds me of needle turn. So for people who know what needle turn is, it's, you know, sort of like a pumped up needle turn.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's
and you
it
also
is.
Have some things on your blog that you share some really nice close-ups of how you do some of the techniques.
Yeah, and that's one reason I started the blog is because, you know, I learned all alone. You know, I didn't have access to national teachers, and I couldn't travel with a young family, so I kind of really had to sit down and figure it out myself. And in the process, I kind of learned the mechanics behind it. And so when I started the blog, I wanted to share that with others who were struggling or not quite getting it, and, you know, explain the way things work with applique, needle turn applique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have a question. So, because your shapes are fairly small, like for you, a flower would have like, you know, 30 parts. My flower
yeah.
would have three, you know, so there's like, my flower would be as big as your quilt probably. so you have, you know, to get smaller pieces located where they need to be, what do people need to know or do?
For me, it's the vinyl overlay method. I use I think one of the discoveries I show people is that I think one of the reasons a lot of people move away from the vinyl overlay is because their fingers are just fumbling and it's really hard to lay those pieces under there just right, especially if you're working with really small pieces. So I use a 6-inch cocktail stick and I can move that baby wherever it wants to go and it works.
Mm. So that's really a good tip, and you have that info in your book.
I believe I do. If I don't, I've shown it on my blog.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Now, your quilts being, you know, they're quite a masterpiece, and you've won many, many awards for your quilts. When did you decide that you would actually enter them in shows?
It was a lady at RJR Fabrics who I had done a block. I decided to enter my first competition, which was a block contest. Mm-hmm. And it was the Mill Girls. And it was, I can't even remember the book now. It came out. And it was sponsored by the New England Quilt Museum. And you had to design and make a block that talked about or demonstrated the mill girls and whatever. And anyway, mm-hmm. I thought, oh, well, I can do that. I can handle a block, because at this time I wasn't finishing anything. I started mm-hmm. a lot, but I never finished. And so when I was lucky, I won. I got a boatload of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And the quilt went to the museum, and it was also published in American Patchwork and Quilting.
Yay!
And I was so thrilled. I was like, oh, my work's in a magazine.
Yeah.
But when the lady from RJR called me and wanted to interview me for their, they used to have a newsletter, she said, is this the first thing you've ever entered? And I said, well, yeah. And she goes, I think you should do it more often and go for the big shows. And I thought to myself, well, she knows what she's talking about, right? And so I didn't even think twice. I just entered it. And the great thing about it was it gave me a deadline. So I actually started finishing quilts.
So the deadline works for you.
It's the only thing that works for me, even to this day.
I think a lot of people have that. It's like, if there's no deadline. Ah.
Well, it's like, you know, you're going along, you're stitching, and then you look back. And applique, I think, is one technique that really does this, because it takes time. So as you progress through the quilt, you see, wow, I'm doing so much better than I did at the beginning. Let me start again.
Yeah, I have some blocks like that. I've been going through some things, and I found these blocks. I was, you know, many years ago thought I'd do the Dear Jane, you know, quilt.
Yeah.
And so some of the early applique blocks, I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I pull mine out. I keep them. And I use them for reference to see how far I've come. So they serve their purpose.
Yeah, I think mine are just going to the quilt. I don't care. That's like, it's not going up for any jury or anything. So do you set goals for yourself for entering quilts and shows?
Yes and no. I have shows that I like to enter.
Mm-hmm.
But it just depends on if I can finish it in time.
Mm-hmm.
American Still Life, actually, I cut probably 50% of the design to make the show. And I was never quite happy with that.
Mm.
So I promised myself that when it's done, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll enter. Another thing I hear is, well, that doesn't look like you. That quilt doesn't look like you. And I'm like, I don't make contest-specific quilts.
Mm.
It's ideas I have, and I do them if I like them. And then I enter, and what happens will happen.
Ah, you know, so it makes you happy to make the quilt, and then you just go ahead and show it afterwards.
Absolutely. Usually my quilts are made with someone in mind,
mm-hmm.
so they already have an owner tagged to them.
Yeah. And you have on your website is Sandra Leichner, Leichner, one word, Sandra.
Right.
And on there, you have a page with your quilts and then listing where they've been shown and the awards that you've gotten.
Right.
Yeah. Besides your store where you have patterns
and
things.
Yeah. It's in
too.
The gallery section. So if you go to the gallery tab or the awards tab, you can mm-hmm. see all that.
Yeah, so people can go see the quilts that they've actually seen in person. So who was Miss the teacup one? Is that Miss D? Who was that for?
I can tell now. The secret's out of the bag.
Yeah.
That is for my good friend Diane Gaudinski.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yes. Lovely, lovely woman. Wonderful lady. I consider her not only my big sister, but my mentor, who was really nice to me in the beginning and kind of took me under her wing and taught me the ropes.
Well, it's a quilt that is sort of, I think, one that speaks to even a broader range of viewers. Did you notice that when you showed it?
Yeah, it didn't speak to judges.
Oh,
but it
what do they
spoke,
know?
Yeah, it spoke to the audience. And you know what? That is where the payoff is to me, because I just, really, I love it when someone looks at my quilt and I hear them say, oh, I really like this or whatever, because those are who I want to make happy when they see my quilt. I'm trying
to
impress
the viewer. And that one's in your book, so people can make that quilt themselves. Plus, you have a single pattern for
Right. There is a pattern. And I should say is I did send in a full-size pattern for the book, but somehow it just ended up as an image you make larger by 1,000%. If you have bought the book, I do have PDF files, and I do have people who contact me, and I will send you that if you have the book and you want to make the tea quilt. I have full-size PDFs you can put together that I can send you.
Oh, that's wonderful, Sandra. I'm sure that'll help a few people who haven't made copies yet of the enlargements. So,
Yeah,
that's much easier. So you know, is there something on the horizon that, you know, you want to tell us about? We have a few seconds here.
Oh, wow. there's lots of things, actually. Just
give
look
me
out.
Fun.
There's a new quilt coming down that is my son's quilt, and a lot of my blog followers know about it, and I'm desperately trying to finish it. And it's where I've taken all the techniques I've learned and just really made myself jump through hoops and raise my skill level, both artistically and technique-wise, and it's beautiful.
Oh, Sandra, I can't wait to see it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts and More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to switch gears and go from fine applique over to die cutting, which is zippity-dippity fast with fancy-dancy machines that are out there. I asked Ebony Love from Lovebug Studios to come back on the show because the last time she was here, you know, we sort of touched base, but there's just so much more information. People were writing, you know, we want to know more things. So Ebony is back, and we're going to go into a bit more detail about getting started with die cutting and answering some questions people normally have. So thanks, Ebony, for joining me again.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for inviting me back.
You know, there's lots of, you know, people who I think own die cut machines but have not taken them out of the box. Do you hear that?
Yes, I hear that so often.
And why do you think they don't take them out of the box?
Well, you know, I think there's an intimidation factor there because you've got this, you know, this new tool. It looks really cool. If you see people using it, it just looks like a great idea. But when you get this box home, it's just really intimidating. It's like buying a new sewing machine almost and, you know, kind of wanting to start and just not knowing where.
You know, I think that that's true because even if they get it out, there's parts to it that are just not familiar. You know, there's things and you're afraid that you're going to mess it up.
Yes, absolutely. And especially with the price of fabric these days, nobody wants to make a mistake cutting their fabric. And especially with the die cutters, it's almost like you're giving up a little bit of control because it's the machine making the cut. And once you run fabric through, you're committed. Where with a rotary cutter and a ruler, you're a little bit more in control. So I think that's one factor that kind of makes people a little bit afraid to start. And to be honest, these machines, they don't come with really great instruction manuals. I mean, the companies try to make them seem really easy, and they are, but it takes them getting used to. And when you start rotary cutting, when you start quilting, there's a learning curve there. I think we talked about that before, that it's just it's just a new skill that you need to learn. And just getting started is the first step.
Yeah, and I think that if you've seen it done in the store or you watched a video and then all of a sudden you're there with all the bits and parts on your counter, you know, what would be the first thing? Because, you know, I'm sort of guilty of the same thing because I have two different manufacturers' machines here, and I don't really have the space to leave them up all the time. So that means I have to put them away and get them out, and my ruler's out, my rotary cutter's out already. So... How can you help those of us who, you know, sort of need to just jump in and do it? What are some sort of first steps?
So I think the first thing is really to get organized. So, of course, when you're die cutting, you are going to need your rotary mat, your ruler, and your rotary cutter. A die cutter is a supplement to your rotary cutting. It's not a replacement. So you still need to have those out. You want to make sure that you you cut in a comfortable position as well. And so I tell people, you know, if you're going to die cut, you should really have the die cutter kind of at waist level so you can cut standing up, and that's going to help you get good leverage on the handle to turn it. And just
okay, so that's actually lower than your cutting table.
Well, what I like to do, like my I'm pretty tall. I have long legs and particularly long arms. So I think everybody's cutting, their comfort level cutting is going to be different. And so you'll want to have, like, I have my cutting table is on a set of bed lifts. So for me, it was more comfortable with the table that I had because it's an old dining room table that I repurposed. And dining room tables tend to be a little lower than because you're sitting down and eating at them, not standing up. And so that was a little low for me. So I used the bed lift to kind of lift it up. But you want to cut in something that's a comfortable position. You don't want to hyperextend your elbow. I like to say that if your arm and your elbow should kind of be at a 90-degree angle so that you're, when you turn the handle, you're kind of not having to move, you know, too much. You don't want it too high. You don't want it too low.
Okay. All right. So I find the scariest thing for me, Ebony, of the whole thing is this plastic sheet that you have to put on top.
Yes.
You know, does that scare other people? Or I'm like thinking, I'm putting all these grooves in it. Is that right? Am I doing it wrong?
Yeah, I cannot tell you how many frantic messages I get from new users who are just totally upset because their pristine mat has all of these lines and slices into it, and they think they've done something wrong. What I tell people is that, you know, the mat is on the very top. If your mat does not get cut, then your fabric's not cut either. So the mat is there to compress the foam. It exposes the blades to make the cut. And it also protects your machine from getting nicks and grooves and mars all over the roller bars. So the mat kind of serves two purposes there. It is perfectly fine. You are doing everything right when the mat gets scratched up, and you basically want to abuse it until it just won't make consistent cuts anymore. So,
so you can use it for a long, long time with all of these grooves in it.
Yes. And the key to really getting the mats to kind of last longer is to move them around. I call it flip, shift, rotate, and shift. So it's kind of, you want to shift it a little bit. You want to, you know, back and forth. So you don't want the blade cutting in the same place. You want to flip it over so that you're using both sides of the mat because you want both sides to get cut. You want to rotate the mat so it's not cutting in the same direction. So you're kind of making sure that you're using as much of the mat as possible. And all of that sort of helps you to extend the life of the mat. But they are meant to be used, and they are meant to be replaced.
Okay. And well, I guess there's really no average. It's kind of like your cutting mat on your table. Some people, you know, you get that, you know, a groove where you normally are cutting, so you just have to move around. And how long it lasts varies.
Yeah, I will say that the rag dyes are absolutely abusive to the mats. And so the rag dyes will cause the mats. You'll use up the mats a lot faster. And that's just because the rag dyes have, you know, a couple hundred blades on them. So they get chewed up pretty fast with the rag dyes. But, you know.
That's to make rag quilts. So it's doing all the cuts for you.
Yes, yes. Okay. It is actually cutting the fringes at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's really great for making rag quilts really fast, but they do go through mats very, very quickly. So, I personally think it's worth it because I don't have to spend my time cutting the fringe.
Yeah, I think that might be, I mean, if you love making those rag quilts, that would be the reason to buy a machine. It's like, and to buy an extra mat at the same time. It's like, exactly. Oh my gosh, who wants to cut all those little fringes? Not me.
Exactly. And that's a good point too, Pat. Keeping extra mats on hand. Mm-hmm. So I buy an extra set of mats, and then when a mat gets used up and I replace it, then I replace my replacement. It's kind of like having extra needles or extra rotary blades on hand. It's just you want to make sure that you keep extra so that you're not in the middle of a project and not able to continue cutting.
And do you find, and this is, you know, maybe not so much a beginner question, but it just popped in my head, is that do the dyes, the sharpening wear out? I mean, are you finding that you have some that you have to actually replace the dyes?
I have never had to replace a dye. I've been cutting for about 4 or 5 years now. The cutting is actually different. So the blades do not, you cannot sharpen the blades. These are not like scissors. The cutting action is more like a cookie cutter where it's pressing.
Pressed,
you don't have blades passing against each other, so you don't have kind of that wear from the friction of you know, pressing against another metal surface. So the dye should last you know, a really long time if you take care of them. Now there are things that that can happen. So one of my friends, she makes so many rag quilts, and she has she uses a really large cutter, the largest that they have on the market, and it takes these wood-based dyes. And with the rag dyes, there's a lot of blades going through that. And she used that dye so much that she actually cracked it in half. But she had been cutting with that thing for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah. So it's not something I would expect from kind of you know, normal use. But it is possible to damage a dye, like if you drop it or, you know, something falls on top of it, you can bend the blades by trying to force too much material through it. So, you know, but if you take care of them, they should last a really, really long time.
Are there extra little things that you found that somebody should have when they start, little accessory items that you could tell me about?
Yeah, so most of the die cutters come with a what they call a die pick. Some of them look like dental instruments, like for cleaning teeth, but it's meant for cleaning out between the dies. Keep those
handy. That's what that's for.
Yes. what happens when you're cutting is that where the blades meet, you know, blades kind of, you know, there's an end to the blade, and then they come together in one of the points or corners or sides. So you want to clean the fibers out that get stuck where those blades meet, especially in the corners or at points. But I have also added a pair of needle nose pliers because sometimes you get kind of chunks of fibers that get stuck in the corners. And so that's handy. It's safer to pull it out with a pair of needle nose pliers than it is with your fingers. Don't do that. I swear by my silver permanent marker. Anybody who has seen my videos knows that I use these silver markers just almost religiously. They are a staple in my house. I have about 50 of them. You're never more than 6 feet away from a spider. Mm-hmm. I'm never more than 3 feet away from my silver markers. So they're all over the house. But what I do with those is I use those to mark the blades of the die so that I can see where the shape is. And then I mark what I call registration lines, which are fabric alignment lines, so that I can align my grain properly with the shape. face that's on the die. And it also serves the purpose of telling me how much fabric I need to cover the shapes that I want to cut. So that all helps in sort of helping you to get more control over what you're cutting and how you're cutting and maximize the use of your fabric. So so if nothing else, the needle nose pliers and the silver marker are two things that I always have handy. And then a lint roller, that would be kind of my third
Okay. Thing. Those are good. So, a lot of us use those for a lot of things, so that's not something. Now, the marker, I want to go back just another step for people who really aren't that familiar. Maybe they bought this stuff and they haven't really noticed that it's just black, or, you know, that when you pull the die out, you can't see where the square is or the rectangle or the heart or the star.
So one of the companies actually makes a in some of their dye, they use two different colors of foam, which helps the shape. But for the dyes that don't have that, and it's really hard sometimes to see the shape, one thing that you can do is run the dye through no fabric on it with the mat, and just kind of run it through, and that can sometimes kind of show you, it exposes the blades a little bit so you can see where they are. Another friend of mine, Marjorie Busby, she's a really awesome die cutter and embroiderer. One of her tips is she covers the whole die with painter's tape, and then she runs the die through, and she pulls off the outline around it. So you kind of leave the shape behind, and then from there she can outline it with a marker or use her registration line. So those are all things, and it's really a safety purpose, too. You need to know where those blades are so you can keep your fingers out of the way.
Perfect, perfect. It's now, just before we take the break, can you tell us quickly what would be your base dies to get, like for piecing?
It's, that's kind of a hard question to use, to answer. But the one, because it just depends on what you're trying to do. But
20 seconds.
The one die that I recommend is the 2.5-inch strip die. It's amazing and versatile, and you can do a million different things with it.
Okay, so we'll tell you, I know you have some others. When we come back from the break, Ebony, you can tell me the other dies, too.
Sure.
Okay. So this American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and Ebony Love from Love Bug Studios here, and we're talking about die cutting machines, sort of the basics and getting going. So besides the 2.5-inch strip die, Ebony, what are a few of the other ones that a piecer should really have on hand?
So another die that I would recommend is a 4.5-inch strip die. So now with the 2.5 and the 4.5-inch strip die, you can do squares, 2.5-inch squares, 4.5-inch squares, and 2x4 rectangles. So those are great to pair together. And then if you get the matching half-square triangle dies in the 2.5-inch and 4.5-inch size, now you've got a really wide range of blocks that you can do just with the half-square triangles, the squares, and the rectangles. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, just to kind of mix it up a little bit, the circles that would sort of fit in with those sets. So if you have something like a 3-inch circle or a 4-inch circle, you can sort of add a little bit of interest to this project. Plus, everybody cuts circles and everybody hates it.
So right.
They're just
it's very hard to cut a perfect circle. Ask me how I know. That's
absolutely.
And do the circles come with multiples on one die?
Yeah, so there are, and it depends on which machine you're using, which dies you're able to use with your machine. There's some dies have multiple sizes, so they'll have one in each size on the die, and then there are other dies that have like an 1.5-inch circle with 9 or 10 of them, on there. So it just there's a wide range of dies out there. So it just depends on what's available for your machine.
Now that leads me to a question that somebody, left me on my blog to ask you. Paula Marie, she is, in the market to go and buy a machine. But she's not really sure how to tell which one, why would one be better over the other or not better? Or, do people just have to test drive these like, they do a sewing machine?
Yeah, so that's one option. It's actually a pretty extensive couple of chapters in my book, The Big Little Book of Fabric Die Cutting Tips, where I cover how to choose a machine. And I always start with what type of quilter are you and what types of projects do you like to make? And then sort of thinking through that a little bit and looking at the dies that are available before selecting a machine. And some of the machines are actually, the dies are interchangeable with some of the machines. So for example, the Sizzix Big Shot Pro, that machine will take dies. They will take dies from AccuQuilt. They will take dies from AccuCut Education and AccuCut Craft. So it's a pretty versatile machine. So for those who want to sort of explore the full range of dies that are out there, but that machine is not portable. So if you want something that's more portable and sort of folds up and can travel with you, something like the Go Baby or the Go, those fold up and store under tables. They only take their own dies, but that's an option. It just depends on how you want to use the machine. And some people have multiple because they just, they need them for different purposes. Just like, nobody screams at us because we have multiple sewing machines.
Right.
Why not have multiple die cutters? There's one for, there's a purpose for them all. So
I think that's a very interesting point that you have. Besides the fact that your book has, you've written a lot about it in your book, which would be an excellent resource, that just you need to understand what you as a quilter wants to do with the machine. And then go from looking at the dies that are available, because that would be really important. Like for me, I might want a lot more applique capability since I enjoy applique versus, unusual block shapes or something.
Yeah, and if you're doing applique, a lot of the applique pieces are on smaller dies. And so if you do a lot of applique, you might not need a giant machine that needs a dedicated table. You might be able to just get one of the smaller, the narrower machines. And there are so many applique dies out there because these machines kind of started in the scrapbooking and the education market. So there's, you know, there's so many more applique dies than there are quilting, you know, quilting shapes, if you will.
Neat. And you have a lot of videos that they can find from your website, lovebugstudios.com. From there, they can get off to see all your videos and your book and all that stuff, right?
Yes. Yep. Everything is linked up there. And I've tried to do a really good job at tagging my videos on YouTube. If you just type in, you know, fabric die cutting or type in my name with the quilt behind it, I always recommend adding quilt or quilter behind my name when you're searching on it. But they should come up pretty, pretty fast.
Wonderful. Now, you told me you have a pretty nifty project you plan on launching that I think a lot of people are going to be interested in. What's it all about, Ebony?
Yeah. So I'm really excited. It's called the Die Cut Scrap Make Later Along, or as I affectionately call it, the DCSMLA. And people are, you know, they're like, why did you name it that? And I just think it's really fun to say. But really what it's about is there's so many really fun quilt alongs that are out there. And the problem that I have is just time. There's so many things that I want to make, and I just don't have time to make everything that I see. But what I do have time to do is cut for those things that I want to make. So I thought what would be a really great thing is just to invite people to cut along with a project for me. And so I'm starting with the Thousand Pyramid shape. And I actually found there are 13 different dies across all of the different systems that you can use to make a Thousand Pyramid die, including, and that doesn't include strip dies. So that's one of the things that I'm going to show is how do you cut for a Thousand Pyramids if you only have a strip die. So so we're actually going to, if you haven't opened your machine, this is a really great way to start because I'm going to go through all the basics of how you get organized to start picking a project, preparing your fabric. And then I'm going through each, I'm actually covering about six dies. Plus the strip cutters so that you can see how do I prepare my fabric to cut for this specific die. And so if you, by participating sort of in this whole quilt along, you'll be able to cut with whatever, either the strip die that you have or the pyramid die that you have. And we're just going to cut projects together. So that's happening all through the month of April. It's starting actually on April 8th, and there's a little badge on my blog that you can click and get more information and to sign up for the cut-along. So it should be a lot of fun. I have about 120 people signed up so far. So it's a pretty big group.
Now, this is going to be so much fun because I think the idea of just being able to cut with you and then be able to leave you a comment and ask you something, that's just a wonderful, wonderful gift that you're giving people.
Well, thank you, Pat. I hope it's good for people. It was something that, it's a quilt that I've always wanted to make, and I thought, hey, I haven't cracked this die open. I wonder if other people haven't cracked it open. So open up the box. Take the die out and let's do some cutting.
You have pictures of your studio on your website. Do you have it? You have it right now, like on your March 18th, 2013 blog post. But do you have pictures in other places too?
I do. So the studio is ever changing. I am actually dismantling my studio this summer because I got a bunch of furniture. I'm running out of space for my dies and machines, so I've got to reorganize the space. So I'm actually going to be, as I dismantle and put the studio back together this summer, I'm going to be posting about that. So it'll be about, how do you organize your space and sort of, people can see what's going on. Right. And then hopefully that motivates me to sort of finish as well if other people are watching.
So. Yeah, I know. Once you take it all apart, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll go on vacation.
Exactly. Because I'm going to put the sewing machine in the dining room. So as long as I can still sew.
Yeah. Yes, that'll be important. So, and you actually, you yourself use more than one model of, company's machine.
Yes, I have 7 die cutters right now, including a couple of electronic machines. And for me, it's important because I educate people on these tools. So it's important to me that I be able to sort of speak the same language with people. And a lot of times, if people are having a problem with a specific die, odds are that I have it and I have the machine that you're using. So a lot of people will email me and say, hey, I'm using this die. I've got this machine. I'm having this problem. Can you help me? So it's just, I don't cut with all of them every day, but for me, it's nice to have that variety because I can help more people that way.
Yeah. And I think that is the same with a lot of educators who are more like on a technique. So you need to know how to use, you know, multiple things. So,
yes.
But you have some fun news because you were actually just joined a design team.
Yes, I was invited to join the Civics design team this year for 2013.
Yay.
And so that was really exciting. It was hard to keep that under wraps. I'm terrible at keeping secrets. So it's hard to keep that under wraps, but I managed to keep that a secret until the announcement came out. And I'm going to be posting projects on the Physics blog, and also it's a nice compliment to my own blog as well because I have the Physics machines, and with this cut along, we're going to be cutting with some of the Physics. So it's a very nice compliment to that. And you know, I'm just really excited to be sort of using their product and helping people sort of learn more about what's going on with Physics. So I'm not exclusive to Physics. It's just another outlet for me to help to educate people, and they're all about educating people on their products. So it was a good fit.
Excellent, excellent. And you travel and teach because I know I was just teaching in Texas right after you were.
That was so funny. I was sitting there and they handed me one of their brochures and I was looking down the schedule and I said, oh my gosh, Fab is here next week. So we just missed each other there in Texas. Now, I don't get to travel as much because I do try to hold down my full-time job at the same time. So I try to sort of limit my travel to some of the bigger shows so that I can sort of cover more people. So I'll be teaching in Houston this fall.
Good.
So I've got about 5 classes lined up for Houston this fall. So I'll be there teaching and continuing to book at other quilt guilds. Don't let the, if anybody's in a guild and they want to book me, don't let the limited travel scare you. Book early.
Contact Ebony. So Ebony, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for having me back. This is just, it passes too fast all the time.
It does. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can find me at patsloan.com. You can visit us at allpeoplequilt.com for American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. See you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for